on the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Archbishop Fulton Sheen's cause for canonization just might have gotten a big boost this week. On Register Radio, Jeanette DiMello and Register writer Joe Pronishin explore why. Also, Jeanette and Register writer Brian O'Neill take a look at what's involved in the pathway to canonization for 70 causes now underway for U.S.-born men and women. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DiMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest today, Joseph Pronishin, is a staff writer with the National Catholic Register. Joe talks with Jeanette about the cause for canonization of Archbishop Fulton Sheen.
Joe, it's great to have you back on Register Radio.
Thank you, and it's great to be here, Jeanette.
Yeah, we've got an important topic. Our readers and our listeners love Bishop Fulton Sheen. And recently, there seemed to be some movement or possible movement on his cause for canonization. But before we get into the current circumstances, can you give us a brief history about Bishop Fulton Sheen's cause for canonization?
Yes, his cause for canonization actually began in 2002, in September 2002, when the Congregation for the Causes of Saints at the Vatican opened the cause and gave him the title of Servant of God. And the cause was opened in the Diocese of Peoria. At the time, Cardinal Egan was approached also, and Cardinal Egan said no. He says it would be more appropriate for him to be canonized from the, or his cause to proceed from the Diocese of Peoria. Because of his ties to Peoria and so on, even though he was in New York for a number of years. But then again, he broke his ties to New York and went to Rochester. Then in 2006, all the packages containing documentation about his life and works and his heroic virtue, plus two alleged miracles, went to Rome. And in 2008, 2 years later, that phase came to a close in the diocese. After the Vatican Congregation for the Saints examined all the material, and they gave a final summation of his life and works, the official one called a positio, to the Holy Father, who was Benedict XVI at the time, Bishop Janke from the Diocese of Peoria presented him with that. The Pope was looked it over and knew actually Archbishop Sheen personally and worked with him for the Vatican Council too, because Bishop Sheen attended all the sessions of Vatican Council too, or Second Vatican Council, I should put it that way. And then in June of 2012, Pope Benedict declared Archbishop Fulton Sheen a venerable. In 2014, a miracle was accepted for his beatification, and it was an incredible miracle of a boy dead 61 minutes who came to life through his intercession. And it was just unheard of, you know, and it was approved by the theologians, by all the medical panel, and that's where the case came to a halt, because before beatification could go on, right after that was declared.
So why did it come to a halt, though? I mean, it seems as though things were moving along quite well. Obviously, you mentioned the Diocese of Peoria sort of leading the cause, if you will, that they had consulted the Archdiocese of New York, where Cardinal Egan was, but that it was really Peoria leading it. Why did it halt after this canonization? I mean, excuse me, after this miracle?
Okay, it halted because of the little tug of war over his body. The his body had to be exhumed and examined and first class relics gotten, and he was buried in St. Patrick's Cathedral in the crypt underneath the main altar of St. Patrick's Cathedral
in New York.
So his body had to be removed from the tomb. First class relics had to be obtained from it. And the body was to go to Peoria for the beatification. When New York was to make the decision, they decided against that. They said that some relics would be sent over to Peoria, but not the body. And with that, Peoria, they wanted to keep the body. And it was, you know, like having a saint with 1 foot in New York, or a potential saint with 1 foot in New York and 1 foot in Peoria, where since 2002, this cause had been going on, and New York was not interested in promoting the cause.
Sure.
But they were interested all of a sudden in, you know, keeping his...
They didn't want to give up his body, basically.
Give up his body. Right.
Right, right. And, it, you know, there, it makes a lot of sense. You know, there for our readers' sake, this is... documented in an article that we published a couple years ago. It's called Venerable Fulton Sheen Cause Blocked Over Bishop's Body Battle. And really, that's not where the story ends, thankfully. Joe, we're talking right now about how there's been some movement, and the movement is that the Diocese of Peoria has announced that one of the relatives of Fulton Sheen has requested the body be transferred to Peoria. So what is this? What's happening right now?
Okay, yes, his niece, Joan Sheen Cunningham, her name is, and she's 88 years old. She's his closest living relative, and she was not only his niece, but she spent all kinds of time with him while she was growing up. She became later, as an adult, a close friend to his. She helped to care for him in his old age, and she had at the time he was going to be buried just in a cemetery, and when he died, and it was Cardinal Terence Cook who requested that can he get permission from her to bury Fulton Sheen's body in the crypt in St. Patrick's to honor him that way, because he had, you know, spent time in New York. And she agreed at the time. So there's clear precedence that she was the one in charge of all that, and she's in charge in a sense of his his interment and where his remains should be. So she has been trying to get his remains transferred to Peoria, to the St. Mary's Cathedral. That's where he had grown up, where he received his first communion, where he was an altar server, where he was ordained. And in fact, he remained always a priest of the Diocese of Peoria, so he never transferred to another diocese, even though he was archbishop later on. And spent time in New York, spent time in Rochester. So she would like the body to be there in Peoria so the canonization cause can continue. She's filed papers with the court in a regular way, in a sense that a relative is seeking permission to a close relative, a relative who was in charge from the beginning, mm-hmm. to move the body of her uncle to the Diocese of Peoria so that the cause for canonization could continue. And he could be beatified, because everything's in place for the beatification at this point.
It's just
point,
crazy.
The body being in Peoria.
Yes, it's just really a crazy situation. So, Joe, how has the Archdiocese of New York responded to this request for the court to intervene?
Right after the court request that the court petition that Joan Cunningham put in, and this was on June 13th, she put that request in. And the following day after they examined it, they just released a press release on this, a short press release, and they wouldn't, you know, that's all they released to me also. And they just said they were happy that the cause can continue on now, but they did say that it was his wish that Archbishop Sheen be permanently buried beneath the high altar of St. Patrick's. They do have something a little wrong there, because his will, he never wanted to mention that in his will. He just was going to be buried in a cemetery, he asked. And that is, you know, public knowledge in his will. So whatever happened there with their statement, I don't know. But anyway, they would like his body to go to Peoria, but then they want Peoria, after the beatification, to return his body to St. Patrick's, which Joan Cunningham doesn't want to see happen. She wants it interred in St. Mary's Cathedral, and where they're already building a shrine to him there, and where they have several, and a museum to him, an official museum in Peoria, and so on. So that's where it gets a little bit sticky again, to see how they can work this out.
Sure. Joe, it seems like a very complicated situation. But it does seem like maybe something will happen now. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Joe Pronishin, and we're talking about canonization cause for Bishop Fulton Sheen. Bishop Fulton Sheen is really ready to be beatified. There has been a miracle, and there is the congregation is ready to beatify Fulton Sheen, but now there's a question of will his body be present in Peoria or in the Archdiocese of New York. Joe, you know, what is going to happen next? I mean, will the court rule on this?
Well, the court will have to rule on this because this is just a civil petition, and it's something not unusual in a sense. So it's she's just asking the court for permission to do this, which she would have to do in the first place anyway. It would have to go through legal authorities when a body is disinterred. And then she's just asking the court to make the archdiocese aware of this. These are her wishes, and it is legal, and they obviously she has the right to do this. And the court will rule on that, whether she has the right or not to do this. From all evidence.
Joe, as we conclude here, you know, I find it interesting because it isn't unusual for a saint's body to, you know, part of his body to be in one place and part in the other. It happens all the time in Europe. It happens to Saint Catherine.
Yeah.
Her head is, I can't forget which one, her head is in Rome and her body is in Siena or something like that. So it certainly could happen in this case, and I do see why the Archdiocese of New York would want to keep him there. He did spend a lot of time there, and it's a place where many people would see him, but it also makes sense for Peoria. So I find it's a really difficult situation. But the good news, Joe, and I want to point people to your blog as we close here to read about this good news. Joe Pronishin has blogged on it at ncregister.com. If you go to our search bar and you type in Fulton Sheen, you will see the history on this. The good news is that I think that something will happen. We will move forward soon. And Joe, I want to thank you so much for reporting on this. And please keep us up to date.
I will. I'll certainly do that. I have much more to say on it in the article for our paper.
Very good. We look forward to it. Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome, Jeanette. Thank you.
Did you know that there are now over 70 U.S.-born men and women who are being considered for canonization? When we return, we'll talk about that and about the whole process of getting the ball rolling. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Brian O'Neill, is a freelance writer and editor in the Philadelphia area. He's also the author of 3 books. Brian talks with Jeanette about the complicated pathway to canonization.
Brian, it's great to have you on Register Radio. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Jeanette. I really appreciate it.
You know, we've got a fun topic to talk about, and that's saints. Everybody loves to hear a good saint story, and you're pretty darn good at writing them, so I'm glad you're doing it for the Register. You know, a couple years ago you wrote a story titled, We Need More Saints from the USA. What was your argument in that story?
Well, you know, while the U.S. Church has only something like 6% of the total worldwide Catholic population, nonetheless, she exercises a huge, a much greater influence on the church than her numbers would suggest. Mm-hmm. And so my thinking was that we need to have examples of holiness so that, you know, given our influence, given the disproportionate influence that we hold, that we really know how to act. How should we be acting as Catholics in this global world? And the saints are the best exemplars of how we should act as Catholics. And, it's great to have saints like St. Giannamolo or Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati or St. Charbel Maclou for, you know, any number of the 10,000 or so in the canon or list of saints that the Church maintains. But it's even better if we can say, oh, gosh, look at this person. He or she was right. An American and,
sure.
You know, knew what peanut M&Ms were, or knew what, you know, the M&Ms melt in your mouth and not in your hands, or, just these different things that kind of make up the American experience. That's kind of why.
It makes a lot of sense, too, because saints seem to multiply. You know, where there are saints, where there's those examples, it seems that more saints crop up, and you've seen that throughout history. So it makes a lot of sense, and I like that argument, and that's why I wanted to start this conversation with that argument, because now there are 70 causes in the works for possible U.S.-born saints. That's up from, I think, when you wrote that piece, I think there were only 40, so that's great news. But in reality, it's pretty difficult to begin a process of canonization. Why is it so difficult? What's the process?
The main difficulty in it, and this is going to sound scandalous to some people, but it just is a fact, is resources, is frankly money. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you have to collect every single scrap of paper upon which they wrote anything, every public thought that was written down. You have to get that. You have to interview people. You have to, you basically have to send the equivalent of lawyers around deposing people as to their experiences with that particular saint. And then that all has to get collected and bound up. And then that, after diocesan approval is obtained, gets sent off to Rome. And, you know, as you can imagine, with the travel expenses and getting all this information collated, it's not cheap. And it's not just simply a matter of saying, gosh, we've looked at Jim Schumer in this little town in Wisconsin, and boy, he was a holy, holy man, and so therefore we think we're just going to call him St. Jim Schumer of Wisconsin.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. So, it's a very rigorous process, and as a result, and the thing is that really, in a certain sense, the church, the entire saint-making process is the so-called devil's advocate. They're really looking to, for any little thing that would indicate, no, this person is not a saint. And the reason is very simple, because when the church makes a declaration of beatification or sainthood, that is an infallible declaration that that person is before the beatific vision. They are before God in heaven. And, it's not something you can mess up on.
No, it's a very important process, and it's important for us to understand how that process gets along. Does it make sense, or is it true, Brian, that saints who were connected maybe to an organization or to a religious community or some sort of foundation already might make it might be an easier process to get started because there's some institutional background surrounding
That's
those people?
That's exactly it. They have institutional and organizational resources. So, for instance, in the Philadelphia area where I live, and I did an article on him for the Register, there is a new servant of God, Father Bill Atkinson, a Augustinian priest, and just remarkably holy, heroic life that he lived for Christ. But the Augustinians are pretty well established here in the Philadelphia region, and they can devote manpower to getting this man canonized, whereas, you know, some other people might not have that ability.
Sure.
Just because they're a layman. And so then, you know, if they're a layman, You know, so for instance, a lot of people are interested in seeing G.K. Chesterton having his sainthood cause go forward, or even Queen Catherine of Aragon, Henry VIII's long-suffering wife. But, you know, this is not either the diocese in which those people lived would say, boy, we want to throw all these financial resources into this, or you would have to have a very wealthy layman come and say, okay, well, here, or a group of laymen say, you know, here we're going to do this. And even with that, even, you know, so for instance, there's Father Augustus Tolton in the Archdiocese of Chicago. His cause is being largely funded by contributions from laymen just like you and me.
Sure.
So it's a
sure,
very expensive process.
Yeah, it's a very good process to know about. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Brian O'Neill, and we're talking about a story he wrote called Making Saints, What Goes Into Causes That Investigate Holy Lives. And Brian, I think Father Augustine Tolton is a great example. Here's a priest who was the first, at least the first recognized black priest in the United States, a huge example, and could be a great example for us today. And yet it's so hard to get his, you know, his cause up and going. Give us another example of some of these 70 causes underway in the U.S.
Well, there's Cora Evans. She's out in California. I made a pilgrimage to her. She's buried in the Santa Clara Cemetery, which is not too far from the Santa Clara Mission. And she's buried in one of these mausoleums. And so if you want to make a pilgrimage to your to her tomb, if you can't strain your neck up because she's in this, like, the seventh row up and the third one over or something in this mausoleum. But, yeah, she was a more convent. A convert, pardon me, from Mormonism, and she was a mystic and died in the 1950s. Really, really an amazing, amazing woman. There's one of my favorites is Father Walter Chizik, who was imprisoned by the Soviets for, you know, years and years and years, and went to, came back to the U.S. in a prisoner swap. And he wrote the books, With God in Russia, and then He Leadeth Me, and, you know, He Leadeth Me changed my life, and so, you know, it's one of the reasons why he's a favorite of mine. We have Blessed Miriam Teresa Demyanovich in New Jersey. There's some that are falling away, that have never really gotten past, the beginning stages. Father Majin Katala, who's, was a little bit after Junipero Serra, but was his cause was actually introduced before Junipero Serra.
Wow.
He repeatedly had the power of bilocation. He had the power of prophecy. He was, you know, I've read some of his prophecies. They came true. He was just an amazing, amazing man. Father Leo Heinrichs was in a Franciscan stationed in Denver and was shot by, was martyred, really, by a man who came to Mass that day strictly to kill a Catholic priest. Didn't
wow.
matter who it was going to be. He was going to kill whatever Catholic priest he came upon. And so during communion, stepped up to the altar rail and shot him at point blank in 1903. You know, his cause
wow.
has gone moribund for some reason. You know, and then we, you know, we have people who are not really in the process just yet, but who, you know, who could be, like Sister Anella Zervas, who was a Benedictine monk out of Minnesota. She entered, I think, religious life at age 15 and died, I think, around age 26 or 27. And at least half of that time, she was completely bedridden, completely suffering, and just joined her sufferings to that of Christ. And a lot of people think that, you know, her cause should go forward too, but that's up to the bishop, and so we'll await his good graces. There's a layman out in Arizona. There's you know, there's just a bunch of them. Like you said, there's
Absolutely.
70 of them. And we could really use their examples and their prayers.
Absolutely. You know, our listeners who are finding the lives of these saints or these men and women who we don't know much about interesting can go to ncregister.com and look for the story, Making Saints, What Goes Into Causes That Investigate Holy Lives, to learn a little bit more about some of these saints. But I think it's, or holy men and women, I should say. But I do think it's important for us to know about them and to consider supporting their causes if we have the means. But we all have the means of praying and knowing about these saints. So I encourage our listeners to do so. Thanks so much, Brian, for being with us.
Absolutely. It's been absolutely my pleasure doing that. Thank you for having me.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com or ewtnradio.net. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.